You're listening to the Student Loan Show. On today's show, we're going to be talking about taking out a loan to help your child pay for their higher education. What are the pros? What are the cons? Should you do it at all? My name is Jay Fleischman. I am your host on today's Wild Ride. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Student Loan Show. My name is Jay Fleischman. I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy day to be with me today to talk about a huge issue that comes up every single year. And that is the question of whether or not you as a parent should in some way pay for your child's college education. Here's a blistering statistic. In order to receive financial aid from the federal government, students have to complete a free application for federal student aid, or a FAFSA form. And anybody who's gone to college or grad school or is the parent of somebody who's done so knows exactly what the FAFSA form is. In 2014 alone, over 19 million people submitted a FAFSA, which means that over 19 million people in 1 year were looking for federal financial aid. Now, let's put this in context. The federal Stafford Loan has annual limits for dependent undergraduate students based on the student's year in school. The 2014-2015 loan limits are $5,500 for freshmen, $6,500 for sophomores, $7,500 per year for juniors, seniors, and any additional undergraduate years of study. There's a cumulative loan limit of $31,000 for dependent undergraduate students. So in other words, you can go up to $31,000 in federal student loans if you're an undergrad. For independent undergraduate students, they're $4,000 to $5,000 higher than the annual loan limits for dependent undergraduate students, depending upon the student's year in school. The cumulative loan limits for independent undergraduate students are $57,500. So you either get up to $31,000 or up to $57,500, depending upon whether you're a dependent or an independent. According to the College Board, the average cost of tuition and fees for the 2015-2016 school year was $32,405 at private colleges, $9,410 for state residents at public colleges, and $23,893 for out-of-state residents attending public universities. So for a four-year stint, you're looking at about $130,000 on a private school, about $38,000 at an in-state public school, and about $95,000 for an out-of-state public school. So $38,000 for an in-state public school if you are independent and you're looking at federal student loans, you've got enough money, right? Well, wait, there's one last piece of the puzzle. That number that I just gave you, that string of numbers from the College Board, is only cost of tuition and fees. It doesn't include books, it doesn't include food, living expenses, transportation, all of the extra expenses that you go through when you're in school, going out with your friends during the weekend, things like that. So it's clear that in all but very few situations, you're not going to be able to get enough money to pay for a four-year education if you're looking to federal student loans alone. Now, what a lot of parents do is they look at the situation and they say, well, I'm the parent. I should be paying for my child's at least undergraduate education. So if your federal student loans aren't going to cut it, well, what do? You can either just pay cash, you can take out a loan, or you can co-sign a loan for your child. when we're talking about giving cash, cash is a great idea. If you've got the money and you've, you know, if you've got, you know, 130 grand sitting around in your savings account that's collecting dust and you can afford to make the payments, well, go ahead, pay cash. It's great. There's no obligation for you to repay the money because it's yours, so you're not taking a loan. But there are a couple of downsides. First of all, and this is a big deal, you lose access to that cash. If you need that money, home repair, illness, car breaks down, something happens, you lose your job, you don't have that money available at all. You're out of luck. So that's the first big deal. Second thing is you lose access to any means of improving that money. So in other words, you can't go out and invest it. You can't go out and buy something with it. You can't put it into the stock market. Can't do any of that. So you're not only giving up the amount of money that you're physically giving up, but you're also giving up any money in the future. So you want to consider that. One other thing that I want to bring up, if you're going to take the route of writing a check and just paying the money, you may want to talk with your tax professional. Well, actually, you do want to talk to your tax professional because there are limitations to how much money you can just give to your child without being subjected to taxes. If you trip that amount, then your child's going to have income taxes to pay, and they may also be disqualified from certain need-based financial aid because they're suddenly going to have a big income because they're going to have to show it on paper. So if that's going to be the case, and talk to your financial professional about it, you may want to set it up that it's actually a loan instead of an outright gift. So that's the downside of cash. But your second way of funding this is you can take out a loan, right? You can go to the bank, take out a regular bank loan. You can take out a home equity loan or a cash out refi on your house if you're a homeowner and you have the equity available. You can take a loan against your 401k or your pension plan, or you can take just a straight out and out withdrawal from your 401k. You can do those things. But let's look at each one of the options because I want you to know what the pros and cons are of each one of them. A regular bank loan is unlikely to cover a full education. I mean, look, we're talking about $130,000 over the course of 4 years. So if you can qualify for $130,000 private loan, unsecured by anything, walk in, sign papers, turn out and leave, then you probably have the money to cover it and then some. You've probably got well enough money. And then it just becomes a question of whether or not you want to give up the ability of having the money to work for you or just having access to that capital. Second of all, a regular bank loan is going to be credit-based. So if you don't have stellar credit, you don't have a really good job, then you might as well forget about it. Don't even bother. Finally, when you take out a loan, it's going to impact your credit score because your debt-to-income ratio goes down. Well, the number actually goes up, but the quality goes down. So your credit score is going to take a hit, and then you're going to be walking around with this additional obligation on your credit report and a legal obligation that you're going to have to pay. So you've got to make sure that you've, A, got the money to make those payments because a private loan comes due right away. Going to a bank, sign for a loan, you've got to start making payments. You've got interest, it can be fixed or variable. You're going to have to keep up to date on it. If you don't have the money to be able to make the payments, then you're going to be in a bad situation immediately. Also, if you're looking forward to making a major purchase that's going to involve a new loan, in other words, a mortgage or car loan or a boat or whatever it is, you're going to need your credit score to be in as good a situation as humanly possible. So that's something that you want to understand about that regular bank loan. You can also take out a home equity loan or a cash out refinance on your property. Of course, interest that you pay on that may be tax deductible. So that is a major benefit right there. You may actually get a benefit to doing a home equity loan or a cash out refinance. They're also going to be credit based though. So there's that same impact on your credit score. In addition, you've got to make sure that you have the equity to pull out of the house and get a loan against. You may not have the equity to pull out the full amount of the loan that you're looking to pull out. So even if you've got great credit, great job, still may not be able to make it work for you. Major downside of that home equity loan or the cash out refi, if you don't pay it back, then the bank's going to put you into foreclosure. You could lose your home if you don't make the payments. So you got to be real careful about this. Understand what you're getting into. Because let's face facts, you can't rely on your child to pay back the money. I know a lot of my clients went into a home equity loan or cash out refi, helped their kids pay for undergrad or grad school. On a handshake, the kid says, yeah, mom, yeah, dad, we're going to pay back that loan. But it's not your kid's legal responsibility. There's a moral responsibility, a moral obligation, but there's no legal one. And if your child doesn't come out of school making enough money to make those payments and be able to live their life, then he or she may not be able to make the payments even if they want to do so. So bear that in mind. You've got to assume that you are going to be on the hook for those payments. Yeah, you get the benefit of the tax deduction if it's going to be deductible for you. But on the flip side, the money's got to come out of somebody's pocket and legally it's got to be yours. And if it doesn't, you could lose the house. And that's a really bad thing, right? You don't want to be homeless, certainly not over this. So that's the home equity loan or the cash refinance. Now let's talk about your 401k. If you have a 401k and you've got enough money in it, you may be able to take a loan out against it. It's great because it's not credit-based. You're not borrowing money from a bank. You're borrowing money from yourself. You're taking your own money and you're using it. But there's also a downside. When you take a loan from a 401k plan, you may have a negative impact on the tax deferral benefits. Here's how. First of all, you lose any tax-deferred growth that the borrowed funds would have generated in the plan. Remember, money in your 401k generates income that is tax-free until you pull the money out. It's tax-deferred. So that tax-deferred growth, if you pull out $130,000, you don't get the benefit of the tax-deferred growth of that $130,000, depending upon whatever the investments are that are in the 401k. Second of all, you're going to have to repay that 401k loan, but you repay it with after-tax dollars. And then you'll have to pay taxes on those funds again when you return, when you take them out at retirement. You're essentially getting double taxed. Also, your pre-tax plan contributions lower your tax bill. If you reduce your pre-tax plan contributions because you are paying back money with after taxes, after tax income, then your income tax bill for the year is going to be higher. So those are three major negative impacts. On a practical level, if the payroll deduction is too high for your budget, then you may end up in a bad financial position. You know, you take out this 401k loan, you figure, great, it's $10,000. I'm going to pay X dollars a month until it's paid off. But you don't really think about what the loss of that money is going to mean to your household budget. Can you still afford to pay the things that you need to pay? Do the things you need to do? If yes, that's great, but you really want to check into that, right? Also, if you don't pay the loan back, then it may be considered an early withdrawal and you may be subject to taxes and penalties. So you think you're being so smart by taking out this loan against your 401k, ran all the numbers, and you say, great, I can afford it even on my budget. But if you get a bump in the road and you can't make the payment, comes a withdrawal. Speaking of which, you typically have to repay any outstanding balance on a 401k loan within 60 days of the date of separation from the company that offers the retirement plan. So let's say you've been working for this company, you've got money in your 401k, you run all of the numbers, you know you're going to be paying money back on after-tax basis and double taxation, all the things we talked about. Take out this, say, $25,000 for the first year of college for your child, and 6 months later, you get laid off. Well, what do you do then? You only get 60 days to pay the balance in full, and if you don't pay that balance in full, there's the early withdrawal. So you've got to be able to hustle that 60 days or understand that there's going to be an early withdrawal and there's going to be taxes and penalties that are going to, you're going to have to pay them. So before you tap into your 401k, you've got to ask yourself a couple of really important questions. And that includes, do I have a plan? Do I have a plan for when and how I'm going to repay the loan? Do I have a plan for the impact on my retirement? And do I have a plan to repay the loan in case I have to leave my job? And by the way, leaving your job, separation from the company, is not just if you get fired. It's if you get fired, if it's you quit, it's if you retire, it's if the company goes out of business and they're gone. All of those things are separation. Separation from the company means any circumstance that involves you no longer going to work for that company again. That's a problem. So you've got to have those three plans in place. You have a plan for when and how you're going to repay the loan. You have a plan for the impact on your retirement because that money isn't working for you anymore. And you have a plan to repay the loan in case you leave your job for any reason. And that leads us to the next option of just taking out a withdrawal from your 401k. Tuition and other education costs can qualify for a 401k hardship withdrawal if you can demonstrate an immediate and heavy financial need for the money and show that other financial resources have been exhausted. That's according to IRS rules. But 401k account holders are still going to have to pay income tax on that money. And if you're younger than 59 and a half years old, you're going to be hit with a 10% early withdrawal penalty. Your plan administrator is typically going to automatically withhold about 20% of the balance and send it directly to the IRS to cover the taxes that you may need to pay on that withdrawal. State taxes are separate, and plan administrators typically will not withhold state taxes, but that 20% is going to come off the top. You're also going to be generally prohibited from making any new contributions to the plan for 6 months after your hardship withdrawal. So look at it this way. Let's say you take out $50,000 in your 401k savings as a hardship withdrawal. That's going to leave $35,000 in cash after the 20% withholding for federal taxes only and the 10% early withdrawal penalty. Add in your state tax burden on the $50,000, and you're probably going to be looking closer to $30,000. Now take the next step and consider the fact that that $50,000, as with a loan, that $50,000 is no longer working for you. It's no longer going to be generating tax-deferred income like it does when it's sitting in your 401k plan. So you're losing money there as well. In addition, you're not going to be able to add new money in for 6 more months. How much more money do you put in over the course of the 6 month period of time? You're losing a ton of cash and you're not even getting the full benefit of the amount of money that you're withdrawing. So you're getting hit on the front end and you're losing money on the back end. As far as I'm concerned, if you're going to do something with your 401k for the purposes of getting money for college, you know, don't take the withdrawal. Take the loan. If you're going to do anything with the 401k, take the loan. So then we come to the question of just taking out a loan, not going to the bank and getting a personal loan, but taking out a federal or private student loan to pay for your child's undergraduate degree. And there are ways to do that. For federal loans, there is the Direct Plus loan for parents. And those are unsubsidized loans that are given to parents of dependent students. You must be the student's biological or adoptive parent or the student's step-parent if the biological or adoptive parent has remarried at the time of the application. So you can take out a Direct Plus loan for parents for your son or your daughter, your adoptive son or daughter, or your stepson or daughter if you're in a position where you've married somebody who's got a child. You can take out that Direct Plus loan for parents in those situations. Your child must be a dependent student who is enrolled at least half-time at a school that participates in the Direct Loan program. So in other words, every university out there, every community college, even most for-profit schools participate in the Direct Loan program that's under Title IV. And here's the word that I want to underscore there. Your child must be a dependent student, not just any student, and not just because they are your child, but a dependent student. Now, remember that the annual loan limits for dependent students are lower than the annual loan limits for independent students. And the cumulative loan amount is $31,000 for dependent undergraduate students, but it's $57,500 for independent undergraduate students. So what you may want to do is you may want to try to figure out a way for your child or your stepchild or your adoptive child to be considered an independent and just get more money from their federal Stafford loan, because federal Stafford loans have a lot of benefits. Your interest rate is lower. There is the subsidy. There are subsidized loans and unsubsidized loans. So some of that money may actually have the interest paid while the student is enrolled in school. In addition, the federal Stafford loans qualify for not only income-based repayment, but also public service loan forgiveness. So there are benefits there. Also, the interest rate is lower on a federal Stafford loan than on a Parent Plus loan or a Direct Plus loan for parents. When you look to take out a Direct Plus loan for parents, a credit check's going to be done. So if you've got bad credit, you may not qualify. And that's just the fact. This is the only federal student loan that comes with a credit check. In addition, you and your dependent child must be either U.S. citizens or eligible non-citizens. So if you or your child are undocumented, or if for some reason you're not eligible to become a citizen, or your child's not eligible to become a citizen, you're not going to be able to get a Direct Plus loan for parents. You must not be in default on any federal education loans or owe an overpayment on a federal education grant, and must meet other general eligibility requirements for the federal student aid programs. So if you're still contending with your own federal student loans and maybe they've fallen into default, you haven't been able to get back on the horse and either rehabilitate them or consolidate them or just pay them off, then you may not qualify. If you're in default, you can't get a new federal student loan. So that's going to take you out of eligibility for a Direct Plus loan for parents. Now, there are no set limits for Direct Plus loans. So there's no annual maximum or cumulative maximum. The only thing is that you're not allowed to borrow more than the total cost of your child's education minus any other financial aid received from the federal government, such as a direct subsidized or unsubsidized loan. So the government is tacitly telling you, look, get your kid to get on the horse and get their own Stafford loans, we'd really prefer that they do that first. And then once they've maxed that out, then you can look at a Direct Plus loan. The school's going to determine the actual amount that you borrow, because the school is who's going to determine what the total cost of attendance is for the semester or for the school year. So they're going to figure that out. They'll take off the top the direct subsidized or unsubsidized loan that your child's going to get, bring you back with the remaining balance, and that's the maximum that you can take for the Direct Plus loan for parents. Under this program, this loan, the interest rate's fixed. For loans that are disbursed on or after July 1st, 2015, but before July 1st, 2016, the interest rate on that loan is going to be 6.84%. Let that sink in. That's a really high interest rate. That's higher than some mortgages. It's higher than some car loans for well-qualified buyers, for people with good credit, which you've got to have good credit in order to get a Direct Plus loan for parents anyway. So you're going to be paying 6.84%. Interest is charged from the day the loan is paid out, as opposed to the direct subsidized loan where the government eats the interest while the student is enrolled in school and in an in-school deferral. The Direct Plus loan for parents doesn't work the same way. Interest starts ticking up immediately. There's also going to be an origination fee, which is more money out of your pocket. There are no origination fees for direct subsidized or unsubsidized loans, by the way. So there is going to be an origination fee when you're applying for a Direct Plus loan for parents. So a little bit more money out of the top. In addition, and this is one of the things that a lot of parents don't realize, federal student loans, and in fact, pretty much all private student loans that I've seen, have a period of time when you're not required to make payments. Typically, that's going to be while the student is still in school. While the student is still in school, you don't have to make payments. You get a deferment. Yeah, interest is going to accrue unless it's a direct subsidized loan, but you're not going to have to make payments immediately. However, with a Direct Plus loan for parents, there's no grace period. The repayment period begins 60 days after your school makes the last disbursement of the loan. So if there's going to be a loan for the 2016-17 school year, and you get the loan and it's structured so that you get half the money for the fall of 2016 and the other half of the money for the spring semester of 2017. If that second disbursement takes place in, say, January, when most schools go back for their spring semester, you're going to have to start making payments in March 2017. There's no grace period. Get the last bit of money and boom, you have to start making payments. So if you're looking at getting a Direct Plus loan for parents, you need to be able to factor that into your budget. If it's going to bust your budget, you're going to have a problem. So factor that into your budget. In addition, there is no income-based repayment or pay as you earn for Direct Plus loans. You can get income contingent repayment, which is a little bit more complex. It's probably going to cost you more money, but you cannot get IBR. You cannot get pay as you earn. You cannot get repay. And in addition, and this is where I see a lot of people get tripped up, if you've got your own direct loans from your own education, and you've got a Direct Plus loan for parents that you took out for one of your kids or stepkid or adoptive kid, and you say to yourself, well, hey, I'm just going to consolidate. I'll consolidate into the direct loan program, and then I'll get my loans on IBR, reduce my payments, right? Great idea. Unfortunately, that's not the way that it works. A consolidation loan that includes a Direct Plus loan for parents pollutes the entire consolidation loan. So what that means is if you consolidate your own federal student loans into a direct consolidation loan, you can go into IBR, or you can go into Pay As You Earn, or revise Pay As You Earn. You can go into any of those programs. The minute that you add a Direct Plus loan for parents into that consolidation loan, from that minute on, suddenly the entire thing is thrown out of IBR. No IBR, no Pay As You Earn, no revised Pay As You Earn. Bad, bad, bad. So look, if you took out a $5,000 Direct Plus loan for parents and you owe $70,000 remaining on your own federal student loans, then you decide to consolidate them. If you only consolidate your federal student loans, because you're not required to consolidate every single federal student loan when you do a consolidation, you can pick and choose. So if you only put your loans in, then you can get onto IBR for that massive balance. If, however, you add in that $5,000 direct loan for parents that got sitting around, then you can't go into IBR for any of it. That's going to cost you a lot of money, and a lot of people just don't realize it. So that's something to consider when it comes to the Direct Plus loan for parents. The best bet is to make sure that your child maxes out on their federal student loans. And what that may mean is it may mean having them recharacterized as an independent on their taxes. And you're going to want to talk to your tax professional about that, because it's going to impact you because you get fewer deductions. It's going to impact them because they're going to have their own responsibilities tax-wise. But the additional amount of money that they can get in direct student loans, subsidized and unsubsidized, jumps from that 31 grand to that 57.5. That jumps 26.5. That's a year's worth of college. It's pretty big. And then if you need to take a look at the Direct Plus loans for parents, well, by all means do so, but that's your choice. There is, however, one other kind of student loan that you can take out for your child's education, and that is actually not you taking it out. It's actually them taking out a private student loan and having you co-sign for it. Now, what that is private student loans are done through regular banks. They have no connection with the federal government or state government or anybody else. They are direct from a bank. So you go into, Wells Fargo, or you call Discover, or any of the other banks that offer their own student loan, and your child applies and you co-sign for it, because these student loans are credit-based. So your child, if they're 17, 18, 19, 20, 25, what have you, they probably don't have a stellar credit history. Either they don't have a very long one, or they may have a couple of things on their credit report, but they don't make a lot of money. So they're probably not going to pass through underwriting for a loan on their own. So they're going to bring you in as a co-signer, guarantor, somebody who agrees in writing to guarantee payment to be 100% fully, totally, and absolutely liable for repayment in the event that the borrower doesn't make their payments. Now, interest rates are going to vary based on the lender. Also, the terms are going to vary based on the lender. Whether it's a fixed interest rate or a variable interest rate. If it's variable, how often it adjusts. If there's a maximum interest rate or a minimum interest rate. Maximum payment, minimum payment. Forbearance options, deferment options, it's all on the table. And they're going to vary tremendously. If you're looking at a private student loan, you need to go into it with your eyes wide open. There's no public service loan forgiveness. There's no income-based repayment. There's no administrative discharge. None of that exists. And there is no way to turn a private student loan into a federal student loan. So in other words, you can't take your direct loans, your unsubsidized or your subsidized direct loans that you got as a result of the FAFSA and getting it from U.S. Department of Education. You can't take those, add in a private student loan, and consolidate them under the direct loans program. Can't do it. No way to do it. Not an option. So you want to go into this with your eyes wide open, because if your child doesn't make the payment, you are 100% legally liable. You're going to suffer negative credit implications if the loan goes past you and goes into collections. In addition, as with the other credit-based options, you're going to have your debt-to-income ratio negatively impacted by taking on responsibility for this private student loan. If no payment is made by your child, then they're going to look to you for money. And if you don't make the payments, you're going into collections, you're going into default, they can file a lawsuit against you. And if they file a lawsuit against you and they get a judgment against you, depending upon where you live, they may be able to do a wage garnishment. If you're in a community property state, they may be able to do a wage garnishment against your spouse as well. They may be able to put a lien on your house. They may be able to take the money out of your bank account. They can do those things. And you are 100% legally liable. What a lot of people think is that they co-sign or they guarantee a private student loan, and they figure, well, after my kid makes a couple of payments, then I'm off the hook. Or I guaranteed at the time of the loan, but that doesn't impact me long term. Those are both false. You are 100% legally liable so long as your name is on the loan. That having been said, there are situations where your bank, your lender for this private student loan may agree to release you as the guarantor under certain circumstances. Before you get all excited, different lenders have different requirements for that. But for the most part, if the loan's in default or past due, you're not getting a guarantor release from the lender on that loan. Why? Because if the borrower's not paying it, then they want to keep you on the hook. They're looking to you as kind of an insurance policy that the loan gets paid. So if the loan's past due, not getting off the hook. Even if the loan is current and your child's credit score stinks, not getting off the hook. Again, you're the insurance policy. Even if the loan's current, has always been current, your child's credit score is great, but they don't make a lot of money or haven't been in their job for very long. Not going to get a cosigner release, not going to get a guarantor release. Some lenders go so far as to look at the school that the borrower attended, the degree that they received, and what their probable career trajectory is when making a decision on a guarantor release. If you went to a bad school and you got a degree in underwater basket weaving, and you got a job doing latte art, and your parent co-signed for you, there's never going to be a guarantor release. You went to a bad school, got a bad degree, got a bad career trajectory. It's not a judgment, that's just the fact, and that's the way that some lenders are going to handle the request for a guarantor release. So if you're the guarantor, if you're the parent, and you're thinking about guaranteeing that private student loan, understand what it means going in. Now, in all fairness, the private student loan may be your best way to go in certain situations. Maybe you can get a private student loan at a fixed rate of interest that's less than 6.84%, which is what the federal Direct Plus loan for parents would be. Well, if you're financially stable enough and you've got safeguards in place and plans in place so that you're always going to be able to make those payments, well, maybe the private student loan does make sense to you. If your only option is a private student loan or taking the hardship withdrawal from a 401k, probably look more towards the private student loan. So the private student loan isn't always a bad idea. None of these are always bad ideas. None of them are always good ideas. The fact of the matter is that if you're going to contribute financially to your child's undergraduate or graduate education, you need to understand not only what the pros and cons are at a high level, but you want to sit down with somebody, an attorney or a tax professional, ideally with both working together, to be able to put together a plan that's going to work best for you, for your financial goals, for your current financial position, as well as your future expected financial position, as well as the student. And that's what this all comes down to. It's just a matter of planning. Now it's up to you to take this knowledge and put it into action in your own life before you make the wrong choice. And so there you have it. That's today's episode of the Student Loan Show. My name is Jay Fleischman. You can find show notes to this episode at studentloanshow.com. You can also take a look at the archives to the show, pick up some old episodes, listen to some stuff that maybe you haven't heard before, maybe some more information. While you're there, join our Facebook group. Our Facebook group is where our listeners, as well as other student loan lawyers, not just me, other student loan lawyers are there too, interacting, asking questions, getting some answers, helping people with some of the issues that they're confronting. We also share a lot of other student loan information that you don't get here on the show. If you have a question, you can also ask me a question right there on the site, and I will answer it on an upcoming show, and you'll get the equivalent of some free pointers from a student loan lawyer. If you need to go the next step, you can do that on the site too. I'm available for federal student loan consulting by email, by phone. I also offer a monthly option that gives you a couple extra benefits, so you can take a look at it there. Always happy to consult with you on your student loan issues. And of course, if you're in the states of California or New York and you're getting sued by a private student loan lender, well, I am happy to step in and defend that case for you. Again, my name is Jay Fleischman. This has been the Student Loan Show. Find out more at studentloanshow.com. I will see you right back here next Tuesday. And until then, remember, folks, look both ways before you cross the street.